CD 3. The new bride wasn't the only Radium Girl suffering that fall. In October 1923, Marguerite Carlo, who was still working in the studio, developed a severe toothache that made her face swell up. And then, in November, another young woman fell ill. "I began to have trouble with my teeth," wrote Catherine Sharp. Catherine had seen at first hand what Irene went through. When her mouth started to ache, it must have shot a bolt of terror right through her. She was brave. She didn't ignore it. Instead, on 17th of November, she went to the same dentist who had treated Irene to see if he could help her where all his efforts had failed for her cousin. Dr. Barry removed two of her teeth. He noticed, as he examined them, that they were flinty and broke easily. He added in her file, "Patient has been employed in radium works in Orange, same place as Miss Rudolph." Catherine was told to come back soon. And she did, again and again. Following the tooth extraction, her gum failed to heal and she returned very frequently to Dr. Barry's office, 5 times within that same month, at a charge of $2 each visit. The extraction had cost $8. Catherine wasn't stupid. "I kept thinking about Irene," she said anxiously, "and about the trouble she had had with her jaw. There was some relationship between Irene's case and mine." She also realised Irene had necrosis. She died. Catherine's always vivid imagination, now fuelled by the knowledge of what she had seen Irene suffer, soon became a constant flickering cinereel, silently playing out what must lie before her, over and over. She was seriously shocked, and a severe nervousness developed which affected her mental health, a situation that did not improve when, on 16th of December 1923, Catherine O'Donnell, another former co-worker, passed away. The doctors said she died of pneumonia and gangrene of lung, but Catherine didn't know for sure. And so Catherine became another ghost girl to haunt her in her head. She was buried in the same cemetery where, 6 months earlier, Irene had been laid to rest. So many girls were ailing. As Christmas approached, Grace Fryer was conscious that although her jaw seemed to be getting better, the pain in her back and foot had become worse. "My foot was stiff. I couldn't bend it," she remembered. "When I walked, I had to walk with my foot real flat." Yet she'd soldiered on throughout the fall and didn't ask for help. "I said nothing about my condition to anyone." But she couldn't pull the wool over her parents' eyes. Daniel and Grace Fryer watched their eldest daughter as she went about her life, commuting to the bank, helping out at home, playing with her young nieces and nephews, and they saw that her gait, which had always been confident and unhindered, had changed. She was limping, despite herself. They couldn't let this go on. "Towards the end of 1923, their daughter Grace conceded, "my condition became noticeable, and my parents insisted that I see a doctor." Dutifully, she made an appointment at the Orthopaedic Hospital in Orange for 5th of January 1924. Before that was Christmas. By Christmas Eve 1923, Marguerite Carlo felt at her wit's end. All fall she'd struggled on, continuing her work at the studio in spite of increasing ill health. Lip pointing had been stopped in late 1923. Josephine Smith, the forelady, revealed, "When the company warning was given about pointing brushes in our mouths, it was explained to the girls that this was because the acid in the mouth spoiled the adhesive." Marguerite had followed the new orders. Her mind wasn't on the job, though. She couldn't concentrate as she'd used to. She had extreme fatigue, was pale and weak, and her toothache, which had started in October, was driving her insane. Unable to eat, the weight had dropped off her at an alarming rate. The smart, tailored clothes she favoured were now hanging off her frame, no longer made to fit her newly scrawny figure.